self-construction, auto-construction. We stay in Latin America, but somehow zoom back a couple of decades into a different political system with Flora and Saifang, who will enter the stage right now. Here's Flora and Saifang, and Lisa Schmidt-Collinet, and Alexander Schmöger. As I said, I think it was a very smooth transition in terms of the topics, I think, but of course we have to switch time and place and politics a little bit. Maybe just a few words before you start. Since 2001, Schmidt-Collinet, Schmöger, and Saifang have collaborated on artistic and curatorial projects. And interestingly enough, most of these projects actually addressed situations in Cuba or took place in Cuba. And the team consists of Florian, who is a Berlin-based conceptual artist and filmmaker, and also a teacher, professor at Umeå Academy of Fine Arts in Sweden. And in Aarhus, in Denmark. Lisa and Alexander are a former Vienna-based architectural practice and practice of artistic research. And over several years, you have been working on architecture and film in Cuba, and you developed also very different positions, very often in the context of the Havana Biennale. The first attempt was, or project was in 2003, where you basically installed a structure that was inhabited and played with by a number of artists. It was probably more an organizational and curatorial role, if I may say so. Probably totally wrong.
No,
you can correct it. And the second time then at the Havana Biennale was an artistic project that you presented there. And we're very happy to have you here. I hope you have all seen their installation in the exhibition hall, Micro Brigades, Variations of a Story. A warm welcome.
Thank you very
to
much.
You.
Nicolas, one question. We were asked or supposed to speak in German, but we could easily also speak in English.
Oh, yeah. There's no problem.
What is it? What shall we do?
We can switch.
What do you want?
Well, we could continue in English.
English. Sure.
Then we keep the section here in English. Yes, our. Okay. This is already a view into San Agustin, one of the sites of Havana that we have been looking into in the last 5 or 6 years, and that are also at the subject of our video that we have downstairs in the exhibition in the hall. Our presentation here, Lisa and me being here, Alexander sitting here and observing us, the remote control, was announced as a commented screening, but knowing that the film is downstairs, we decided to enhance the comment and reduce the screening a little bit. But what we want to present here is nonetheless also a kind of film, maybe more like a slideshow, and we will also stick to the visuals and the images that also have influenced our filmic ideas. Downstairs, the video is half an hour long. So, where do we start? Well, in Cuba, one should say our discussion at least started with the moment of the revolution, and one of the big questions of the revolution was housing. So what we want to look at now is a little bit of also pre, but mostly, of course, after revolutionary housing, a visual of which you see here. But what we should, of course, mention also that there was a lot of architecture going on in Cuba before the revolution, not only advanced single-family housing by international architects, but also buildings, huge living units, like here the Foxa building in the Vedado district of Havana, built 1956, and at the time of its finalization, the largest steel concrete construction worldwide. But we want to go back at this moment then, what happened then in 1959 with the revolution. Things changed. What happened was not only political change, but also, and this is what brings us here together, the architect and the filmmaker, also a change in cultural politics. Filmmaking started to be very important. A filmic institute was founded, the ICAIC, and the two films, the first films that were initiated at that moment, right after the revolution, one was about agricultural reform and the other one was about housing. This is La Vivienda by Julio García Espinosa, but only a very short excerpt. Well, maybe this film is not coming up here. Maybe. Technical problems here. Maybe we just start to... here we go. Okay. Sound? It's very minimal, the sound, sorry. This is not quite the original score, but it is already the version that we have included in our film as part of the film downstairs. But what you see is the confrontation of the rich families living in the houses and the many poor families living in slum-like developments. And obviously, the revolution was triggered and was also caused, and it was also promised that there would be a solution to it. So here finally you see the contrast. That was the bright future looming up with the housing built for all of the families in the country. The first of these solutions maybe started already earlier, before the revolution. That was Havana del Este. At least the building, the planning started before that, and I will hand this to Lisa now.
One couldn't separate the pre-revolution and post-revolution time in that clear shape. So Havana del Este is one project which shows a very interesting continuity from before and after. Havana del Este is also called Unit Number 1, which refers to the neighborhood unit planning, which was very in common and discussed internationally in the 50s. The basis for the whole development of East Havana was actually the plan and the idea to build in 93 to build a tunnel under the bay, which allowed them to open for construction all these areas on the eastern coast. And so this was basically also a land speculation project from before the revolution. As you can see here on the plan, the location east, and here you see Old Havana and East Havana. So interesting, this discussion of the neighborhood unit quite internationally. You see here that it is one unit was then built, that was construction actually was started then according to a master plan, and one unit was built. You see that there is this circulation for car traffic, which forms the boundary of the whole area, and also interesting to see that the core basically is empty. The core is for the sports fields for, and for the green area, and the houses are regrouped around, and then smaller streets are just going as a cul-de-sac into the area and inside its pedestrian area. Also, of course, what was important, the addition of common program as schools, but also shopping facilities, and the pedestrian area and the greenery inside. Havana del Este was also then called Ciudad Camila Cienfuegos. So this was part of then the appropriation process of the government to show off this project as one important project of the revolution, standing next to other important projects as the Cujaye campus, a university building, and the famous art schools, which were also constructed in the beginning of the 60s. So this was done also very showed off at the in 63. There was an International Architecture Grand Congress in Havana, where more than 2,000 international architects were coming, and they were all visiting this complex. And you see that, and also in the section that is a more demanding architecture, we have a split level, and also a reaction to the climate with these possibilities of ventilation. Just some images of also you see the relation of very high buildings, the 11-story buildings to the lower buildings. So this was all these concepts of how to create an interesting a neighborhood. But of course, so this was for around 1,300 housing units. So it was a very unique project, and of course this was not a project where the question of housing could really solve on a larger scale. So it remained a problem, and then slowly voices became more heard that were proposing prefabrication as a solution for mass housing, and especially the big panel production. Actually, in 63, there was a large hurricane who was devastating part of the country, and then the Soviet Union financed a production plant of these large panels, the was called the Grand Panel 5, which was also used in the Soviet Union, but actually derives from the French Camus system. So this was used in the 60s for a couple of buildings, but so the advantages are obvious. You have less work, and also you need less wood, which actually was a topic at the time in Cuba. But as you can see, the construction process, it needs heavy prefabrication, so it needs a lot of material, but also a lot of technical equipment. So in the end, this large panel prefabrication didn't really solve the problem. So another solution which was thought of was then, why not let people build their houses themselves? And through this, the ideas of the microbrigades were pronounced first in 1970. And this is very interesting because 1970 is a year where another enormous, huge collective project was pronounced and proclaimed, which was the 10 million tons sugar harvest, which was to be reached within 1 year, and which was actually nearly reached. They just missed it about 1.5 tons. And you see that it was also a large campaign in the television and cinema who was then promoting this project.
But it was nearly reached, but nonetheless, it ended in a kind of economic catastrophe because there was a large breakdown because of the machines breaking down, because the transport of not being able to handle the amount. And this is, for example, so that is the situation that we face at this moment, the beginning of the 70s, which is also called the gray continuum, the gray year fifth, so to say. There's an interesting film by Chris Marker, his second film, actually, that he made, Visiting Cuba Again, and where he uses a lot of material by Santiago Alvarez, news material and the likes, where he describes the failure of this zafra, this harvest of the 10 millions. The 10 million, the film is called La Bataille de 10 Millions, but it starts with a very interesting paragraph for us also, because it says basically, when the revolution turns to normal, we the people from Europe, maybe looking at this direction, we turn our eyes away. When there is no victory more to be celebrated, or when there is no martyrs to be mourned, then we get bored and we turn towards something else. With this film, he wanted to look also at what it means that a post-revolutionary momentum, also under the condition of the boycott already in place by the US, what it means to get to normal life and to try to build things on a level that has to face the typical problems like monetary funds and the likes. The film ends then, the film also contains material of Fidel Castro speaking about the Zafra, first announcing it, and later then there's a very famous speech of how he, well, he doesn't defend the lose. In fact, he claims that his enemies, or the Cubans' enemies, they were right when they would say that they failed. But we will go on, we will continue. Microbrigades then were initiated also on this background that manufacturers maybe would not have enough work, so why not get the people out to build their own housing? So what we then also describe in the film, groups of 33 untrained people, of which a larger amount male, small amount female, built houses up to 6 stories high, each unit up to 36 apartments. So that's far from building your own little private house on the ground. We try to get now here one film example again.
La madera, las instalaciones de plomería, las instalaciones eléctricas. Pero fundamentalmente son necesarios los hombres. Participan de la transformación que ha sufrido el concepto del pasado de lo que era un trabajador asalariado por este nuevo trabajador que va a llenar sus necesidades de vivienda y las de su colectivo con plus trabajo.
So, okay, this might be now have caused a little problems for the translators, but basically what the film says, next to all the material and the means, it needs people to build a house. And this is a film made by Nicolas Guillen-Landrian, published in, presented in 1971 through the ICAIC. There's two things that we want to mention about this also. It should not go unnoticed that this was a film like a heroic documentation about how these houses are built with a good cause, but it should also be mentioned that Nicolas Guillen-Landrian before made documentaries that were far more critical of his own country and the leadership, which got him into deep trouble. So, for example, his film Kofia Arabiga, which you find on YouTube, it was a very important one that caused him a lot of trouble. Our film also owes a lot to Nicolas Guillen-Landrian because we kind of refer to his filmic language in many ways. Now, Lisa, I hand it to you again.
So you see one of these very simple buildings, five stories high. And to build these buildings, it's not only that it needs people, but it also It means building with very simple means. So it also needs a simple plan. So actually already in the 60s, there were studies at the Ministry of Construction going on how to develop a very efficient ground plan and also to develop efficient building techniques. And there was these test designs called Edificio 1, Edificio 2, 3. And then one test building was constructed apparently in the courtyard of the National School of Communist Party Instructors, where there were one of these building blocks with two staircases and five stories high, which was apparently built by three people within only 6 months. So actually, when this plan of the 10 million tons of sugar couldn't be completed, it was immediately that Castro brought up this new program. And so the Ministry of Construction had to react fast, and they drew out of their drawer the plans that existed. And this was, at the moment then, it was the type E14, so Edificio 14, which just became then the standard blocks for a large-scale mass housing. So here you see one of these examples. It's very simple floor plan based on a 3 meters a grid. And here we see that it's three staircases, and then we have this four or five, depending, very simple rooms. So you enter directly into the living room, have one unit for the water and kitchen, and two sleeping rooms. Then, so it started with E14, and then E14 improved, as you can see on the lower plan, was added a patio in the back. So this was the kind of improvement that were at that time possible within the Ministry of Construction. So so here you see just two views of the inside. So you see it's either the balcony or the loggia is integrated in the house. And what you can also see is that this building with simple means also proposed a simple technique. So, for example, the windows, they were placed directly at the concrete frames or under the concrete frames, so there was no complicated parts to be constructed. So the microbrigades built for themselves, but also they built for others. And this was actually what contributed also to the failure of this program, because so actually they were supposed to build these housings for the others of the company who couldn't go to the construction site. And then in the end, the housing was distributed according to needs, but also according to merits that they did within their company. So it was clear that whenever you were more critical to the regime, it was became nearly impossible to get an apartment. And it also there were people who worked for years and years with more and more projects and never obtained an apartment. So this is one part of the story, which is a simple, wonderful idea, but of course in its reality has many, many different facets.
Maybe one shouldn't speak of a failure as such, but more of a run of the reason of a slowdown and a diminishing will to participate. But after all, it was like about 20,000 units that they built, or more. No,
it was enormous, really, at the beginning of the 70s. So from 71 to 75, and all in all, it was like 80,000 units. So this is really mass production. But then it faced these problematics of not having enough material and not couldn't cope with that. But we wanted to give just brief insight in two areas that we were looking more closely for our research in the film, which are two neighborhoods which arise at the same time and are constructed with the same building type, both started in 71. Alhama in the east, so more east than Havana del Este, and San Agustin in the west. Here you can see how this E14 block constitutes the whole neighborhood, and you can see this enormous dimension. These houses, today it houses 100,000 people who live there. Actually, the construction started from west and then slowly moved to the east, which is also interesting to see in the plan that on the left side you see is a more, still more organic planning, and then towards the east, or towards how time is progressing, it becomes more and more formal, so it becomes this very geometrical shapes which are just turning the building blocks and in a 45 degree angle, which of course produces a kind of strange but also interesting spaces. This is one image from the quite a western part now of this of the Alamar settlement. They are then named like micro 1, 2, 3. This is micro 10. And so how time moves, this is also not constructed by the classical micro brigades. It were also then prisoners who were included into the construction of these buildings. If you look at this other settlement in the west, San Agustin, it's interesting that with the same, exactly the same building block, so there's 45 meters long and 9 meters width, it's nevertheless quite a different neighborhood which arises. Here you see the plan, you see the dimension of the same blocks. And what is interesting that in San Agustin there had been a plot plan, a parcellation existing before, and so it was in the early 50s when this were a little distributed into little lots where people built their kind of holiday houses or little fincas, and so this was kind of an existing pattern. And then the large blocks, they intervene and superimpose with this fabric, which, of course, makes a different kind of a neighborhood. And also, it's closer to the center of Havana and easier to reach. Because the Alamar settlement is also called Siberia by the people because it's so far from everything and difficult to reach as public transport definitely degraded completely.
It has an incredible lively hip-hop scene, by the way, yeah.
So there is another like chapter or aspect which we wanted to bring in because it's quite interesting the way how the micro brigades is dealt with different systems, building systems, and then also with the use and misuse or mixture of different system. One which we came across is the Sistema Girón. And the Sistema Girón didn't have anything to do with housing. It was also developed in 1970. It was developed along this idea to build large-scale schools in the countryside. This went along with a plan to increase the production of citrus plants and to have the idea to educate and at the same time make people work on the plantages. So there was a system, construction system needed, which was very flexible to build these schools, easy to be transported, and this is system Girón with a span of 6 meter, very simple system with columns and this slept under pretension was then developed for exactly these kind of school buildings where there was. And within a couple of years, I think within 2 years, there were 500 of these schools.
One detail about one detail only about this image, you might see it from far, I hope. The school is called Olof Palme. The Cubans had strong connection with Sweden, and at that moment, we're also very admiring the Sweden 1 million program. So when we talk to them now, 25, 30 years later, 40 years later, they always told us, yeah, but the Swedes, they really built the 1 million because the Cubans are as often the most critical of their own program and as also of this one.
So one detail, we see that this slab under tension also creates some sculptural ideas, which are quite nice. In the meantime, the E14 type was added. There was another building type developed, which was called the SP 72, so the super panel developed in 1972. And the change was that now these it was a mix of prefabrication and then manual labor, and so this prefabricated system allowed spans now of 6 meters. And this was the interestingness was that also maybe the ground floor could be used for other things, which was definitely not possible with the E14. The ground plans, nevertheless, they stay exactly the same. So it is just this change of the construction system. And then through this change of the 6 meters and having this mass of material produced for the schools, it becomes just a very natural Cuban way of working that these slabs were then integrated into housing building. As you can see here, that these are these minor changes in the facade that you can see this sculptural element of this slab. And also you see that if you remember the images from the from inside before, it is the same living room with this 3 meters width, and then you have just half of this slab, which could of course span the double.
The slab being the ceiling element, correct? Yeah, this was soon then also taken out of the system, and being there in large masses, it found also new ways of using it. So here, for example, you see the same ceiling element turned around and used as a bench. And then here in the next image, you see the same ceiling element now building the ceiling of a bus station. But we found it also as a pathway construction. And that was also the reason... So there was. It just turned out that this is a system with manifold usages, if you like it to be. And this was for us the reason to single out this element also in a first installational version of Microbrigade's Variations of a Story that we did for the Alternativa in Gdansk, and where we have this, we have like a cast of the ceiling element that theoretically could be filled with concrete and making such an element to be used now also in this new location. In the background, there's a poster of the older grand panel system, and next to it, there's a small monitor with an amount of, with 40 slides, which were then at that moment basically starting to build up the story for us, the story that we wanted to tell, and which then in the next version we later turned into this film that premiered in the Berlinale here in Berlin, which is now visible downstairs in the exhibition, starting every full and every half hour, if everything goes right, and where you can also see a lot of people interviewed that were like Mario Cuyula, town planner and architect and artist. And there you will see also what we described before, that there's so many ways that this program, which was successful in numbers, nonetheless can also be criticized, and is of course especially best criticized by the people who live in it or by the people who have been working with it, by the Cubans. So one comment to this was, for example, that when we showed Mario Cuyula the film later, he said just he didn't find it critical enough. That being it,
One idea also why we wanted to change that format, not to show the film, is that for us it's not a story which stops. We are just, it's the whole material is really a way of collecting, traveling, collecting, and because of course all this information on housing in Cuba is very difficult to access, and it has so manifold different aspects. And so we still go on, and we still go regularly and look for where the new microbrigade system, because continuously we hear that they still exist. And what we also included in the exhibition are two photographs of two projects which were presented to us as microbrigades, and then we visited them, and in this case we also found workers who were there on the construction site and explained us, sure, this is a microbrigade. It's a brigade that builds house by house. But it turned out that they had not really, or they had lost this notion that the microbrigades built for themselves. They just linked it with the idea that a brigade builds a house and then another house, and this idea of small company, which is a brigade. So this was interesting for us to see that this term of microbrigades is so present everywhere, but the notion seems to shift at the moment.
Even though in the case of the last images, you were talking about the construction for bi-military and for military, where soldiers were involved, so in a kind of new way interpreting it, there was a brigade that was building for themselves. Mm.
Yeah, and it's also interesting that it was still one circle, one company building for themselves. It was also the case for another settlement, which was presented as a microbrigade, but which was always told to us, this is a micro-style building. And this is a settlement in Nuevo Vedado, where it was told that it's a kind of medicine collective who started to build these small houses. So there are always two apartments in these houses. And apparently, as you can see, the way how the windows are placed and how the attica is formed, and the colors, of course, are somehow referring aesthetically there to the microbrigades. And so we found that interesting that this is introduced as an aesthetic category. But, I mean, this is all part of a still ongoing project.
Yes. So we hope to present more soon, but this is it for now. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you so much for the insights and extension, in a way, of what you are showing in the exhibition. I was wondering, maybe you can clarify one point, is somehow the relation between planning, like engineers or architects, and the microbrigades. Was there any contact, or was this just a kind of top-down process where prefab elements and a standard house was somehow given to the workers, and then they started building?
Yeah.
Just to get maybe the larger picture of planning, in a way.
It's actually interesting, because when we saw these buildings first, we thought that planning and design would be more involved also by the inhabitants. And there was this building with the stars, you might have remember. But then we also found out that this building has stars because there are military veterans living in there, and this also comes from above. So there is this very little margin of designing the grids of their of the windows. And it was actually really that plans were handed out to these microbrigades, and that this exact plan of the E14 was like copied like in staples. Of course, we would have loved to find these documents. It was impossible. But and then there was in the microbrigade, there was always one or two skilled people who was involved. But this was not none of the architects or none of the planners.
There is in our film, there is, for example, Daniel, the architect, commenting that when he got involved in it, he's a generation that worked with it in the late 80s and 90s, they tried to restart the program, and they felt like, yeah, this is much less centralized than before, and they felt really kind of looking towards a future and towards something else. But then the Eastern Bloc broke down, and the money went away because it was a huge subsidized by Soviet Union. So that moment, and we called it another variation of the story, that moment after being a rise again, there was another crackdown for the whole project. And but then also towards the end of our film, he's also announcing basically, I mean, it could be so easy. Give out the land, give some loans, and let the people just build without this control from top down.
I think it's a really incredibly interesting research and an example also that somehow contradicts some of the cliches of self-building and planning on the other side, because it shows really interesting contradictions also and productive misunderstandings also what you can do with prefab elements. Maybe we can have maybe one or two questions because we are stretching probably the limits of what we can do here with our beloved technicians. Are there any questions?
All overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed.
Oh, yeah. There is one.
Thank you for the presentation. When I was there in Cuba, it was long ago, so but what they told us a lot was about the difficulties concerning the materials. You mentioned it, just if you can talk a little bit more about that this kind of mass production of housing faced a lot of trouble because of the difficulties imposed by the what you call the impossibility of importing some kind of important materials, construction.
This is was continuously a continuous discussion with also many variations to follow our idea of what kind of ups and downs this had, and it came and went with the different associations. Basically, for example, I mentioned it before, but I didn't go into detail. When in the beginning of the 70s, in the beginning, the revolution was not even so much close to be say that this is a socialist revolution, but then towards the 70s, basically, they had to work closer with the Soviet Union in the East Bloc. So the first prefab systems came from Yugoslavia, is this right, Lisan?
Yeah, there were many different systems imported from Europe.
So they were up and down. There was also then related to the ability of these foreign states to support the ideas in Cuba. They were dependent on that. What we have also in the film is, for example, then also that there's a concrete plant that was a gift by the GDR, and that was opened by Erich Honecker himself visiting the country. But also this took like 8 years to build, and it was always a slowing down and increasing of speed on the basis of how much material was available. And then the 90s saw, of course, a very hard cut down on these kind of things. But actually, we also by now, we do not see a very lively home program there. The military, that was the buildings that you saw, which were the newest ones, second from last, before the doctor's ones. The military, of course, always had the first hand on material, and is closest to it because the military not only is basically the military power, they also they also traditionally control the tourism, and tourism means at the moment the most money. Raoul, which is now the president, was before the head of the military, so you can see why military units can be built, but hardly anything else is built at the moment. There is some private initiatives though, but minimal.
Here, Francisca Bonorai. As has the last word, almost, but you have to answer.
Not directly related to housing. As far as I know, there were problems after the breakdown of the Eastern community or whatever, Warsaw Pact, here in Europe without subsidizing by the Soviet Union and GDR or whatever. I've heard about a shortage of nutrition, and as far as I know, Havana is important for this kind of urban agriculture, people using spaces not occupied by doing gardening, allotments, planting the potatoes or whatever. Have the in between those houses built by the brigades have been used to plant potatoes, tomatoes or whatever? Or what do you know? Because I'm not very good informed about this problem.
Yeah, it's true that this necessity, of course, made people grow their own food in the 90s, and also to have animals in their houses. So to have a picket home was just happening. Of course, I mean this. Now excursions are undertaken to go to Havana to study this urban farming, which is so en vogue here and there. Just really happened because of the necessity. Actually, we have found it more in larger scales within Havana than in these large settlements. Also there in smaller areas, so there's sometimes like directly along the building there is a strip which is then cultivated, either plants or food, but not really in the dimension of having fields in between. So.
There is different forms, though, of nonetheless of, we wanted to make this excursion, but for time limits we didn't do it, forms of how people living in these units, how they make it themselves. One of them, but we didn't, it's really true, we didn't see much of agriculture directly connected to the housing, but we saw a lot of garages. And it's not the only country where one can observe that, how much the garage space as a space where you can put things in, not only cars, but everything, then how important it seemed to be. And so there's a lot of shift, like makeshift kind of small units of metal, of wood and anything. The town planners that were at that time connected with the micro brigades, they hate it. They just hate it. It kind of completely like destroys their idea of how it should look like. But I mean, it's there, it's needed, it's done, you know. So that process, there is a process going on.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Florian and Lisa, and all of you for your persistence. And
thanks for your patience.
Also, big, big thanks to the technical team and to everybody who made that possible. We'll hopefully meet tomorrow again at 2 o'clock for another long day of presentations and discussions. Thank you so much.
Thank you.